And welcome to the NFL Draft.
This is 710 ESPN Seattle's presentation of the NFL Draft. Watch the 710 ESPN Seattle Draft Tracker on our video stream at 710sports.com.
Come on, man!
It is the 710 ESPN Seattle NFL Draft Night coverage. You're with Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross. Mike Lefko here producing. You can join the conversation on the text line 710-710 and check out the 710 ESPN Seattle Draft Coverage video stream on 710sports.com. Jake, I'm sure it was a riveting experience for you. You've actually been watching a lot of these guys. In fact, I noticed a couple names that you had been previewing as part of our draft profiles going in the first round, including the late first round with that last pick from Washington.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And so it's been fun to watch, you know, kind of how this draft is shaken up. I mean, you look at, you know, some of these names and you talk about Rashad Bateman, you talk about Gregory Rousseau, Tryon out of Washington, as you mentioned, guys that I had profiled, you know, they end up getting slipped in there at the end of the first round. But also, you know, there's some special names in there for me too. You know, Zach Wilson, I saw him coming out of high school and seeing him go to BYU and getting selected second overall to the New York Jets. So I think that everything that shaked out with the quarterback position, lots of drama. There wasn't, Stacey, five quarterbacks taken in the top 10 like everyone was predicting. But that made it fun. That made it interesting. And you see the Bill Belichick be able to get his quarterback at pick number 15, Mac Jones sliding all the way down to him. Justin Fields, the Chicago Bears, trading up to secure him at pick 11. So there was a lot of interesting factors to that. And then obviously the 49ers, Stacey, taking Trey Lance. So a lot of big conversations to be had, you know, after the first round of this draft.
Now, if I have to pick, Jake, the most interesting story of the night, the most interesting pick, I'm not sure that I would be 100% on with Trey Lance being that pick, but it would certainly be fighting for that top spot. In fact, that's why Trey Lance is going to lead off our first segment here. Five new homes for five new quarterbacks. We're also going to talk about the new moves that have shaped the NFC West as that division starts to take shape. We heard from Kyle Shanahan talking about whether Trey Lance was always front of mind or whether they changed direction, went on from Mac Jones. And then we're going to be wrapping up talking about some of the Seahawks' needs. That's all coming your way next. Don't go anywhere. This is our 710 ESPN Seattle NFL Draft Night coverage with Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
You're listening to the Seahawks Draft on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming nonstop Seahawks draft coverage from the first pick to the last on 710sports.com.
All right, it is 710 ESPN Seattle's NFL Draft Night coverage, wrapping up everything we learned in night one with Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross. Now, we've got five new homes for five new quarterbacks. Jake, we all knew that quarterbacks would be the story of round one. Trevor Lawrence, we all knew he'd go number one overall to Jacksonville. No one was shocked by that. Zach Wilson, I think most people expected him to go number two overall to the Jets. You followed his career closely, and so I do want to cycle back, talk about Wilson in just a minute, but this is where things get surprising. Now, the story had been the 49ers trade the farm, go up to three, and they're doing it for Alabama's Mac Jones. 49ers didn't publicly commit to anyone. They said, we've got a couple options we're pursuing. We haven't made up our minds on one guy. We're looking around. We're making up our minds. We're figuring it out. Cut number one. This was the pick.
With the third pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Trey Lance.
No way. The upset.
North Dakota State.
Now let's talk about why it's no way. He has one season as a redshirt freshman. Now, mind you, Jake, you already know this, but it was a phenomenal season, a perfect season. 16 games, almost 67% completion, over 2,700 yards, 28 touchdowns. This is key to no interceptions. Number four in the NCAA in passing efficiency, three in yards per play, and third in adjusted yards per pass attempt. He won the Jerry Rice Award given to the best FCS freshman and the Walter Payton Award given to the most outstanding FCS offensive player. Played just a single game, though, in 2020 as a redshirt sophomore against Central Arkansas. The Bison season was later canceled. So here's the problem that people had. He was perfect against teams that were admittedly maybe not as good as the teams that Ohio State and Justin Fields were facing, that Alabama and Mac Jones were facing, that Clemson and Trevor Lawrence were facing. But he was also perfect in those games. So what do you do? Do you think they made the right call?
I do. I actually really do think that they made the right call here. And I know that it was a shock because, you know, Dave Wyman, Bob Stelton, Brock Heward, you know, Brock was really high on Justin Fields. And I think there's a great reason for that in terms of him just being proven against high quality talent. He had some big games and big moments and stepped up through injury. But I think Trey Lance has the highest ceiling out of any of these quarterbacks in this draft. And I think that when you look at Trey Lance and what he's doing, he's 20 years old, Stacey. He's still very, very young, and it's going to be challenging for him, you know, coming out of the gate here. And it's going to be very intriguing to see what Kyle Shanahan does with Jimmy Garoppolo. And do they try to play the game of a stopgap quarterback where if Trey Lance isn't able to get the job done in terms of him being ready to play year one in his rookie season, do they stick with Jimmy G, or are they all in on Trey Lance? And anytime you pick a quarterback third overall and you trade up and trade the farm for him, Stacey, you've got to feel like this is something special. And here in cut number two, Brock, you were talking about at number three, you got to have a unicorn. You got to have special talent.
It is traits. It's what you settle in on. It is why I was not sold on Mac Jones. Many were not sold on Mac Jones at that point because there's just not any plus trait. Bad body, average athlete, average arm. Yes, very bright, can handle a playbook, is accurate. But there's just, if you're going to draft in this territory, you want unicorns. You want guys that are different. And Trey Lance, 6'4", 225.
And so when you look at Trey Lance and from that aspect, Stacey, you've been a big fan of Trey Lance. Us as a show, we've talked about him quite often that maybe he might not be the best thing for the Seahawks over the next couple of years, but it's sure going to make the NFC West fun.
It is certainly will. I mean, I remember all of us talking about which quarterback would you least like to see come to the division and which would you most like. And I think we settled on, all of us were like very pro Mac Jones being selected.
Yes. Give me McCorkle Jones.
I read this really fascinating take. Was it The Ringer? Gosh, I forget. Now I'm miscrediting. But I think it was The Ringer, and it was basically that if you're wrong about these quarterbacks, the worst one to be wrong about is Mac Jones, because if you're wrong about him, it's the floor that's lower, not the ceiling per se. That he...
Correct.
He had great performances and could certainly be your guy, like your Matt Ryan type guy. That was what Denny Kelly compared him to. But because he wasn't as mobile, wasn't quite as athletic, if you miss on how accurate you think he might be, for instance, then you're really running into trouble. So Bill Belichick clearly feels comfortable enough taking him at 15 overall. This, by the way, the fallout from that pick of Trey Lance, Bears then trading up from 20 with the Giants to take quarterback Justin Fields. He was the quarterback, Jake, that both of us said, I least want to see him come to the NFC West.
Yes, there's no doubt. And I think for the Chicago Bears, they found themselves a gem at number 11 to be able to trade up for. It's, you know, you talk about all the capital that they were willing to give up to potentially get Russell Wilson or to potentially get a Deshaun Watson and to be in that game. Well, they didn't have to give up nearly as much for a guy like Justin Fields, and for him falling down to them, this couldn't have been a better scenario, a better situation for them to find a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal and for them to be able to try to surround talent around him over the next couple seasons. And so if you're Matt Nagy, if you're Ryan Pace, you got a little bit of life, and you better put a roster around this young man to give him an opportunity to succeed, because I think he's got the special it factor to be able to get it done.
Every draft night, I wish I had a crystal ball or some special time machine where I can fast forward in time just specifically to see in 10 years what do all these prospects look like, because you fall in love with every single story pretty much, and then you always wonder how it's going to work out. This is especially true with quarterbacks, and I think it might be especially true in this case with Justin Fields, wondering whether or not for Chicago, for instance, not trading for Russell Wilson, not being able to give Seattle a deal that was great enough to just knock their socks off, not being able to give them a deal, and instead in this draft taking your quarterback of the future, if that ends up being one of the best quarterbacks for them in franchise history, there would be a lot of guys to compete with. It's a storied franchise, but say that he ends up being great for them. What a crazy turn of events and a domino situation that Seattle inadvertently was a part of. A couple minutes left here, Jake. Let's talk about what we think, speaking of the futures for these quarterbacks, about the possible fit for each of these guys. Trey Lance in San Francisco, I think we're both assuming that means good news for Jimmy G and his eyebrows that he's staying
potentially in the NFC West. I think it gives him a chance, Stacey, because Trey Lance, because of the lack of games played, because of how young he is, he's 20 years old, and Kyle Shanahan's offense is extremely demanding. Kyle Shanahan himself is extremely demanding, but I do believe that he will be able to get the best out of Trey Lance. And if you're going to pick him and select him at pick number 3, Stacey, I do believe that they have full intention of trying to get him out on the field. So ultimately, we'll see how it shakes out. But I think that they're going to do everything they can, just like they did with RG3, even if they have to create a new, different kind of scheme and system to surround his talents and to get the best out of him in year one, they'll be able to do that. The other one that really stands out to me that I'm going to be interested to watch, and you talk about that fast forward button, Stacey, it's going to be Mac Jones at 15 with the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
You talk about Bill Belichick, and I said from day one when Cam Newton was re-signed, I did not feel like it was over in terms of Bill Belichick addressing the quarterback situation. Now, it was fortunate for them that Mac Jones fell down to 15 after all the hype of him talking about maybe getting selected in the top 10, but you know, you heard Brock Huer talk about Mac Jones' bad body, not being able to move around.
Bad
well,
body.
You know who also had a pretty bad body who couldn't move around very well? Tom Brady. And I'm not saying that Mac Jones is going to be the next Tom Brady, but Bill Belichick has been able to have great success with a quarterback of that likeness. And I think that the moves that they made in the offseason, they go out and they get two dynamic tight ends in Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry. They go out and get Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne. They revamp this offense to give weapons better weaponry around the quarterback. And I think Mac Jones has the ability to come in and win that job from day one and to make this offense better. So I'm going to be excited to see how that plays out.
Now, the Jets take Zach Wilson at 2 overall. They also help out that offensive line in a trade with the Vikings. They're at 14 and take a guard there to help out their new quarterback. You are a huge fan of Wilson and got a lot of flack quickly here for saying that he was going to end up bouncing back after a rough season and being a top pick. And you were right.
Yes, I did. And that was all the way back a couple of years ago. Now, Zach Wilson, because of those injuries, Stacey, this last year, he was in a legitimate quarterback battle. It wasn't because they didn't believe in his talents, but it was like, is this guy going to be able to be healthy coming off of shoulder surgery? And he had to go earn it. And I think that he's been through a lot in his high school career. He's mm-hmm. been through a lot in his college career. And people are worried about being a one-hit wonder, but I think he's got the talent. You talk about ceiling. Zach Wilson's ceiling is absurd. And if Robert Saleh, Mike LaFleur, they're able to surround him with good protection and good offensive talent, and they were able to get that done with their set pick, the kid out of USC, I think that they have an opportunity here to create a situation for Zach Wilson to thrive and succeed, even in a tough city like New York City.
Two new faces in the NFC West, so let's talk about how this division is taking shape and what every Seahawks fan needs to know after tonight. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to the Seahawks Draft on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming nonstop Seahawks draft coverage from the first pick to the last on 710sports.com.
All right, welcome back to the 710 ESPN Seattle NFL Draft Night coverage. This is Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross helping you guys understand what to make of night one, round one of the NFL Draft. Seahawks obviously not on the board, trading that pick away to the New York Jets. Jets get their new quarterback with that pick they got from Seattle. They take a guard out of USC, obviously another trade, though, involved there. Now, Jake, let's specifically look at the NFC West. We're done with New York. We're done with all AFC teams. We're done with everyone else. We're back to the West, back to Seattle, taking a look at the two new faces that are here. We've been talking all night so far about Trey Lance, so I do want to get back to him, get back to San Francisco. Let's go a little further south here to Arizona. The Arizona Cardinals on the board at pick number 16 overall, cut number 7. Here is who they add.
With the 16th pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select Zaven Collins, linebacker, Tulsa.
Now, I was personally surprised, Jake, they didn't go cornerback. They could have gotten a great one in this draft still, and they lost two starters with Peterson and Kirkpatrick now gone. Kirkpatrick, I don't think, is signed anywhere yet, so he could still be someone that they sign back. Maybe they're waiting until after the draft, until early May. Who knows? But either way, a bit of a surprise for me, but still, that defensive front seven looking even scarier.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And you go to cut number eight here. Here's what Brock Heward's instant reaction was about Zaven Collins.
This is what they do. They want the most unique guy. And last year it was the positionless safety, linebacker, nickelback, right? Isaiah Simmons, who picked off Russell, right? They just want freaky fast guys in their blitzing system. And this guy's 250 plus and just can run. So I thought it was either going to be him or the linebacker out of Notre Dame, Owusu Koromoa. It was going to be one of those two guys because that's what Arizona does. And you're going to see this guy blitzing Russell, and he's going to come from any different direction.
Now, I think to expand on what Brock's saying, Zaven Collins, when I saw the pick come in, I said, dang it. Because Zaven Collins, we didn't really profile Stacy linebackers because it wasn't a need for the Seahawks. Yeah. It's not a need for the Seahawks. They're not going to address it in the draft. But Zaven Collins is one of those guys that is probably one of the best players in this draft.
You I just don't
talk
like
about
hearing that.
Play making ability. You talk about a sense for the ball, a sense for how to play the game. Zaven Collins stands out amongst everybody else in terms of just his ability to make plays. And, you know, you talk about how fast he plays, and that's what Brock's instant reaction was. Well, it's more about not exactly his 40-yard dash, because in his pro day, he only ran a 4.6. He ran a 4.67, but he doesn't play that way. He plays fast. He reacts quickly. He is instinctual. And the reason why that is so important, a positionless player, you add that with Isaiah Williams of last year, is because Vance Joseph likes to create havoc. He likes to create confusion with blitz packages and make it hard on the quarterback to understand where guys are lined up, where they're coming from, what the coverage is going to be. And Zaven Collins allows Vance Joseph to just tap into that even more. So when you talk about their front seven and their defense overall, it is fast, it is physical, they're going to compete. And Zaven Collins certainly makes the Arizona Cardinals better defensively. So I think this was an excellent selection for them and what they want to do. And it's certainly going to make it harder on the Seahawks.
It will. I don't know that there was any addition, it's just because it's one round, I think, that made me think the Seahawks needed to change their priorities. And we're going to be talking about what the Seahawks need to do coming up next. But before we get to any of that, I think that that's immediately what I thought of with this pick, because I thought the same with Simmons from last year, that like, oh, this defense is just getting better. Here they go. But I think there's still enough weaknesses with Arizona that I look to see which other areas they kind of bulk up with first. And I still think that my priorities for Seattle remain the same. That being said, though, Jake, the 49ers and Arizona Cardinals are both going to pick again before Seattle is on the clock. San Francisco going to be on the clock at 43 tomorrow, Arizona Cardinals at 49, and then the Seahawks and Rams back-to-back with 56 and 57. Is there any player that you're going to be kind of hoping slips to Seattle there at 56 and can get by the 49ers and Cardinals?
Oh, yes. Yes. The way that this draft unfolded, I'm actually very pleased how it unfolded for the Seahawks. Now, I think what you're going to see happen is I think you're going to see a little bit more of a run at offensive guard, at offensive tackle. There wasn't quite the same run as people were anticipating. And this is a extremely deep draft when it comes to offensive linemen. And you talk about the centers that we all profiled, Stacey. I mean, you talk about Creed Humphrey. You talk about Quinn Meinertz. Mm-hmm. They are still there and available. Landon Dickerson from Alabama. Those guys are available. You look at the receivers. Elijah Moore. I don't think he's going to last very long in the second round. Terrace Marshall Jr., Rondale Moore, Dwayne Eskridge. I'll give you a couple other guys that are really intriguing as well. Talon Wallace out of Oklahoma State. Amari Rodgers. Diami Brown. These guys are all still available for the Seahawks. And so when you talk about offensive line, talk about receiver, and then cornerback, Stacey, all these guys that we profiled.
This is what I want.
Tyson Campbell, Ifeatu Melifonwu, Aaron Robinson, Benjamin St. Justice, who Jim Nagy said would be a tremendous fit here in Seattle and is a guy to keep an eye on. All these guys are still in play and still on the board, and that's ultimately what, if you're asking me what I wanted to see, mm-hmm. that's exactly what I wanted to see going into day two of tomorrow.
By the way, round two, day two starts at 4 p.m. We'll be carrying that on 710 ESPN Seattle. Wyman and Bob covering that round two for you guys. And Jake, you're going to be there as well, right? Guesting in for that round table?
Yes, I am good. Yeah, I'm going to be there for that round table at some point. I'm going to join the party, I think, around 7 o'clock and then carry us all the way through from there, but along with everybody else. So, but, you know, Stacey, looking how this draft unfolded in the first round, and I just, you know, rattled off good news that, hey, there's all these guys still available.
Are you looking at me for bad news?
Looked at. No, I'm looking at you to tell me,
okay,
at this point, where are you leaning? Where do you feel in your heart that you want the Seahawks to go? Are you still saying, hey, team trade back?
Yes.
Or are you looking at this and saying, there's this unique guys that I would like to select at pick 56?
Jake, you are trying to catch me in a trap. I know exactly what you're doing because you and I got into an argument yesterday in which I said I will always be team trade back. Team trade back. Team more rolls of the dice. More another analogy that means shots at the board. I don't know, you guys. There's three of you. Help me out here with an analogy.
Bites at the apple, Stacey.
Thank you, Jake. And now that so many of these guys... You know that 32 people will be chosen on night one, and yet still you fool yourself into thinking that fewer will be available. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, what? Wait, Quinn Meinerz is still available. Campbell is still available.
Right.
And it's like, of course they are. You were just looking for an excuse to not want to trade back anymore. I think the only thing, Jake, that is going to tempt me is if several of those guys that you profiled that we talked about are still available. Because I did sell myself on a lot of those guys. Dyami Brown, I thought, would be a great fit at wide receiver. I think this team badly needs a wide receiver three. In fact, I would put wide receiver three and I would pick cornerback ahead of offensive line right now because I really do like the addition of Gabe Jackson. I think it was a good way to shore up the line. And if you were to tell me, hey, the Seahawks with their fifth round pick got Gabe Jackson, I'd say, great, fantastic. That certainly helps, and you can look ahead to next year in their press conference. And this could just be smokescreens, right? Like, we already went through a month plus of Kyle Shanahan making us think they were taking Mac Jones. But Pete and John did say, hey, it's going to be a competition between Kyle Fuller and Ethan Posick at center. So I think we're assuming they may be done with the interior linemen unless they take a tackle.
Yeah, I think that they have gone down that road before. I'm not buying it. I think anything is possible at the right value. If you look at a guy like Quinn Meinerz who somehow falls to the third round and they trade back, I don't think that they miss out on those opportunities when you can find great value. But I do think that there are a lot of candidates, Stacey, that are still left at the positions that you and I have really zeroed in on, as you said, corner and receiver, that I think would be excellent additions to this team at 56. And the reason why I'm not team trade back is because you need to find a difference maker. You need to find a starter. And I think that some of these cornerbacks, Tyson Campbell, Ifeatu Melifonwu, you know, Kelvin Joseph from Kentucky, Aaron Robinson, I think that these guys can come in and compete from day one. And you look at the receiver position at that third receiver spot, I think that there are a lot of dynamic guys that can really help this group win one-on-one matchups, stretch the field vertically, and to be able to take advantage of some of the lack of respect that they will face when everybody else is worried about DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and Gerald Everett. So I think the Seahawks, as of tonight, are sitting pretty in terms of how this draft unfolded for them.
Perfect way to set it up, Jake, because how we're going to wrap all of this up, we took a look at what we did night one, going to look ahead to what's possible night two, rounds two and three for the Seattle Seahawks. They've got one pick on day two, though could it be more? That's coming your way next.
You're listening to the Seahawks Draft on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming nonstop Seahawks draft coverage from the first pick to the last on 710sports.com.
710 ESPN Seattle's NFL Draft Night coverage continues with round two and three tomorrow night. That starts at 4 p.m. Pacific time. right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Jake Heaps here with me now, obviously, will be on tomorrow night. Jake, you are going to be the only representative for Jake, from Jake and Stacey. Curtis and I will not be there. I really need you to just make us look good. You know what I mean? Like, look, you are going to get emotional when Quinn Meinerz eventually comes off the board. And it may not be to Seattle, who has just one pick on day two. And I need you, Jake, listen to me. I need you to just keep it together. Just stay calm. Just very professional.
I don't know why you question my ability to keep my emotions in check.
Jake,
I
mean, you literally chest bumped Brock like when the Seahawks got Ziggy Ansah.
I'll act like a pro. I'll shed a tear during the break and not on the air, okay? I will shed the tear on the break. Look, you know, the Quinn Meinerz to me and Creed Humphreys and Landon Dickerson, the reason why I'm so pro-center is because I want them to be able to lock up as much of that offensive line for the future as possible. Not to mention that in this division, the NFC West, one of the more difficult aspects about this division is the defenses you go against, the pass rush that you go against, and the fact that you got number 99, Aaron Donald, that you go up against twice a year. And for the Seahawks, it was three times last year. That was three times way too many for the Seahawks. And I want them to be able to shore that up. And I think that they have the opportunity. It's not that I am I'm just completely negative on Ethan Posick. That's not it at all. But Ethan Posick is only on a one-year deal, and you are also trying to project that he's going to get better in year two and make leaps and bounds over what he did in the second half of the season. So I think that there's an opportunity to upgrade there potentially, but it really depends on how the Seahawks are feeling and can they get in a trade something that is really worth their while to trade back from 56, because I truly believe there are going to be multiple players at positions of receiver, cornerback, and offensive line, even defensive tackle, Stacey, that can help this team, improve this team, and make an impact on this team from day one. Whether it's being a rotational player, an effective rotational player, or being a guy that can earn a starting spot, I think that there's going to be good quality talent at 56. If you were to tell me that they could get multiple picks in the second and third rounds on day two, that would be the only way I would be for that. Don't give me day three picks, okay? I don't want more day three picks. We've already been through the numbers. Six out of the 49 selections since 2013, Stacey, have turned into consistent starters for the Seahawks since that time frame. Six out of the last 10 second-round picks have turned into consistent starters, with a couple of guys that have turned into Pro Bowlers, guys that have turned into big-time cashed-in second contracts. And so you get more value and impact in the second round in the Seahawks draft history.
Oh, man. I keep arguing to trade back, and I want you to know that if the Seahawks take a wide receiver or a cornerback there, I'm going to outwardly complain that they didn't trade back, and inwardly I'm going to be pretty excited and pretty over the moon, because it's two positions that I've been...
You are not going to complain that they're going to trade back.
I have to be on brand. I have to back up what I was saying earlier. I can't let you win, but internally, it will feel like a little bit of a win. You know, I was looking at, look, how am I going to prioritize these two positions with offensive line, which I think nationally most folks, no surprise there because of what Russell Wilson has been saying, have offensive line as a top need for Seattle. I actually was looking at cornerback and wide receiver three as the two top needs, bouncing back and forth between the two of them. I settled on cornerback as the team's top need, specifically because I have a little more faith in Shane Waldron, in Gerald Everett, in a diversified passing approach, and Chris Carson as a pass catcher, potentially Rashad Penny as a pass catcher, than I do with the cornerback group. That's not a knock on any of those guys. It's just to say that you have those guys, all of them, on your roster for one more year, and then after that, all except for Ugo Amadi become unrestricted free agents. So best case scenario, Jake, one of those guys has a breakout year, and then you have to gamble on whether or not you want to pay him for 1 year of standout production with several years of just kind of like an okay starter or backup production before that. Like, that's your best case scenario. Correct. Is you're making a gamble on a contract next year.
Yeah, it's a great point. And you don't want to be in that situation whatsoever. I mean, that's the last thing that you want to do. And in Pete Carroll and John Schneider's press conference, you know, the other day, they referenced the fact that they love that they have been able to create great competition again at the cornerback position. That the COVID offseason that they had and all the restrictions that they had and the lack of a preseason really limited the amount of competition at a lot of different positions last season. That is not going to be necessarily the case this year. And I do believe that cornerback is going to be something that they address. I don't know when it's going to be. A second round, I would be okay with. But I would not be surprised at all if they tried to use their fourth round selection on a cornerback. If they were able to get a fifth round selection in a trade. So cornerback is definitely going to be addressed in this. I just don't know exactly where. And I do agree with you that it is very important that that position is addressed, because they need to build not just now, but for the future, when a lot of these guys are going to be gone after next season.
Now let's take cornerback off the board. I know you've talked about center. Do you think you would put center as your singular, the most important position you'd like to see the Seahawks address with their first pick, or is there another position?
Yes,
and granted,
yes,
it is,
but I do think that the other position that they could draft in, and I think it would be very telling, is offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Now, people may automatically assume that it's because of, oh, well, Dwayne Brown, he's 36 years old. Maybe they're looking for the guy of the future. You got to remember, Brandon Shell is only on he's only got one more year on his contract left as well. So, you've got the tackle position that you need to address as well, that maybe this might be the perfect year where you get a developmental tackle where there's no pressure on him to start, talented kid, and then you can develop him for the following year and figure out, do you need to replace right tackle or left tackle? And maybe the guy can play both or one or the other, and you feel good in that position. So center, tackle is the two offensive line positions that I would be okay with them addressing. And then the outlier, Stacy, is defensive tackle. Defensive tackle, a three technique, pass rusher, a disruptor, that type of interior defensive lineman, I think is another, behind the scenes wild card type of selection that I could see the Seahawks potentially making to continue to keep adding to that depth of that defensive line.
Let's talk about wide receiver just a little bit. We saw a report from Jeremy Fowler of ESPN that the Seattle Seahawks were pretty okay with staying put, having Freddie Swain essentially going to replace David Moore, and then maybe they take a depth piece, maybe with a seventh round pick, maybe they turn to unrestricted rookie free agency and sign a wide receiver there. Would you rather see them take one a little sooner than that?
Yes, absolutely. I would like to see that happen, because the reality is that you may feel good about Freddie Swain, but you need to create legitimate competition for Freddie Swain. Freddie Swain needs to go out and earn that job. And there are a lot of traits that I really like about Freddie Swain. Again, when he was drafted, there were a lot of things that I heard that I was really excited about him, and I continued to hear those things when he was here in Seattle. So I do think that there is a bright future for Freddie Swain. How big of a role can he eventually end up contributing and playing to, I think, remains to be seen. But I don't think you sacrifice bringing in legitimate talent, difference-making type of talent at the third receiver position just because you think that you might have a guy there. Create that competition. Always compete is the mantra of Pete Carroll. And a guy out there that I think would be intriguing in the later rounds potentially is Cornell Powell out of Clemson. Big physical guy, a guy who really played well in the national championship game. And I think that when you talk about the semifinal game. And I think when you talk about the ability of some of these guys in the later rounds, the receiver depth in this draft is going to be the second and third round of this draft. Mm. I don't think that you're going to find a lot of gems later on in the draft. It's more shooting in the dark if you're going to draft 4 through 7, but that second and third is really the sweet spot in this draft for that receiver position.
Do you think that there's a big difference, a notable difference in value between, say, a third and like sixth or seventh rounder? Like, where does the value start to become less when you're talking about day 2 and day 3? Because for Seahawks fans listening, which are all of you, the Seahawks, the two other picks are on day 3. So you've got one pick tomorrow, two picks Saturday. Now, I think all of us are expecting that to turn into more picks, but here's the thing. If you want to turn it into more picks, those picks are probably all going to be on day three. So do you lose
most
a lot
likely.
Of value there?
Yeah.
I know it's a dumb question because, you've also found gems.
You run the risk.
Okay.
You run the risk. You have found gems in the past, but I do think you run a tremendous risk. And with how the first round played out, it played out a little bit differently. I thought that there was going to be a few more receivers that were going to be taken in the first round, late first round. So we'll see how this thing plays out, Stacey, to be honest with you. In the second round, there's still a lot of good talent left, and the receiver position, we'll see how valued and how truly deep talent evaluators and teams around the NFL really felt that this receiver class was, because I think there's a bunch of intriguing names out there, and we'll see if they continue to fall or if there's a huge run on receiver in the second and third rounds of this draft, which I anticipate there will be.
Now, most important question as we wrap this entire draft recap show up with all of us, inviting the three of you back there in here as well. You get your kind of draft moment where you get to choose exactly who's there. I'm allowing you to have anyone there. Anyone. Jake, who are you choosing?
Anyone?
Anyone you want.
I'm choosing he's not going to be there, but I'm choosing Elijah Moore out of Ole Miss. I think Elijah Moore is the outside of the top receivers of Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith and the Jamar Chase and that crop of guys. I think Elijah Moore is easily the best receiver that is remaining and the guy that can make the easiest transition into the NFL. I think he is a dynamic slot receiver that can make a big-time impact. He's a big playmaker. So if I had to pick anybody, I would be picking Elijah Moore.
Oh, I love the NFL draft. It continues tomorrow with round two. That'll start at 4 p.m. Pacific time. Jake is going to be on coverage starting at 7 p.m., but you can obviously hear the beginning of that with Wyman and Bob. They're kicking off their show at 2 p.m., and they'll be taking you guys right into night two of the NFL draft. That'll do it for Jake Heaps and myself today. Thank you so much for tuning in to our 710 ESPN Seattle NFL round one.
This was fun,
wrap up.
Stacey.
It was fun. It flew by, Jake, and unfortunately you're stuck with me because in less than 24 hours, you, me, and Curtis are right back here. Do you think Curtis is healed losing the draft game? I don't know. We're going to find out.
I don't know. We'll find out. He had a day to recover. We'll come back. I think he'll be fine, but we certainly got a lot to talk about tomorrow.
A lot. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to our 710 ESPN Seattle NFL round one.
This was fun,
wrap up.
Stacey.
It was fun. It flew by, Jake, and unfortunately you're stuck with me because in less than 24 hours, you, me, and Curtis are right back here. Do you think Curtis is healed losing the draft game? I don't know. We're going to find out.
I don't know. We'll find out. He had a day to recover. We'll come back. I think he'll be fine, but we certainly got a lot to talk about tomorrow.
A lot. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. Seahawks on the board tomorrow for the NFL draft. This has been 710 ESPN Seattle.